You're listening to the Reef in Focus podcast, produced by the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority.
In good weather, you can go to the drop-off where the continental shelf just drops straight down, and that's where what my biggest fish ever, which we'll talk about later.
G'day everyone, welcome to the latest edition of our Reef in Focus podcast, coming to you from beautiful Darumbal country in Yeppoon in central Queensland, thanks to the wonders of technology this time around. And our next guest needs no introduction. Without embarrassing him, you've seen him on our TV screens for the past 27 years as host of Australia's longest running fishing show. And if you're a fisherman or woman or a bit of a tragic like me who gets out every chance they can, you're going to love this next chat. Here to talk all things sustainable fishing is host of Fishing Australia and longtime Great Barrier Reef advocate and ambassador, Rob Paxavanis. Hello, mate.
G'day, Lincoln. Absolute pleasure to be here, mate. So excited about today's podcast, mate. I've really been looking forward to it, mate.
Look, there's a million questions I want to ask you, mate. Firstly, it seems like you might have just about the best job in the world. So can you tell me, firstly, how did someone who initially set out to become a civil engineer, if I'm not mistaken, end up as a fishing guide, fishing show host, traveling the world, catching some of the world's best fish?
Great question. I always loved science, and I did do civil and environmental engineering down in Melbourne Uni, but I always wanted to make documentaries. I was fascinated by the Attenborough stuff and Malcolm Douglas and different things when I was growing up. And I always wanted to make fishing shows, something to do about sustainable fishing in the environment and utilising nature sustainably. But I had to get a haircut and get a real job first. So off to uni it was. There was five channels back then, ABC, SBS 7, 9 and 10, very hard to get into TV. But my dad loved cameras we grew up on a farm, back when there was little camcorders and making silly videos about the bush and the environment and about fishing. And so, eventually I cracked into it. Far, far different these days. You can jump on YouTube and do something straight away. Back then, we had no outlet. We had to knock on the door of a major network, which is never going to happen. So it was a slow process. So when I got there, I've held on to it.
And I imagine for someone like you, mate, fishing's been a part of your life ever since you were a kid. So before the cameras and the TV crews were involved, you worked as a fishing guide.
Yeah. The way I cracked into TV was I did every other thing that I could. I worked as a fishing guide, fly fishing down south for freshwater fish and estuaries, and then taking trips up to the tropics as well. So as a guide and that put pressure on me to learn how to catch fish when you got people paying you to catch fish, but I loved every minute of it and also kept me out and amongst something that I loved. And in the meantime, wrote for magazines and newspapers and slowly got a TV gig. So I started from the ground up. I wasn't much of a writer. I was great at science. And I slowly got better at writing. But I always loved science too. And that's why I think I've got such an appreciation for the science that we're going to talk about on a little bit on today's show. But for me, my love is teaching people fishing and teaching them how to do it sustainably the best way I know how.
Yeah, right. That's a great segue into our list of questions, mate. So let's crack on. But I wanted to start with a bit of a hypothetical, if we could. I've been meaning to ask you this for a long, long time. If you had one day on the reef, you can go anywhere, take anything, and catch anything, where are you going and what are you trying to target?
Oh, that's such a hard question. Maybe in really good conditions, probably the outer reef, the drop-off is just, it's a whole nother world out there. But the beauty of the reef is it offers that protection from the wind. So I'm happy anywhere on the reef. I never worry about catching fish when we head up to the reef. That's why we head up there every year to film and for family holidays and social fishing. Yeah, it is a masterpiece of a place. Absolutely.
Now, it seems like, you probably hear this a lot, mate, it seems like you probably have the dream job getting to travel Australia and the world, catching all sorts of fish, and somewhere like the Great Barrier Reef must genuinely be a bucket list type destination for throwing a line. But can we take you back many, many years ago? When was the first time you started fishing on the reef? When was the first time you saw the reef? Can you give us a bit of background?
I can remember it like yesterday. almost 50 years ago, my dad and mum took my three brothers and I, so the four of us, up to Cairns. And even before we went there, there was this was vibe from our parents. We're talking mid-70s, you know, we're going to the Great Barrier Reef, we're going to Cairns, and, you know, what an adventure. So we flew up from down south and a life-changing experience. You know, we went out fishing on this beautiful old wooden clunker boat, you know, one motor, no sounders, you know, across the old skipper. Yeah. And there was a dozen of us there. It was my family and sharing it with whoever else was on board. And you know, I remember the heat and I remember catching lots of fish. And, you know, we were catching things like our sweet lip. They called them tricky snapper. We loved all the names as kids. Then we caught the coral trout and all the adults were so excited. We caught the Nanagai and the Red Emperor and my brother Darren. And you know what? There's always sibling rivalry between brothers, but in this instance, my brother Darren hooked up a mackerel, and we only had these old hand lines, so no flash rod and reel, just a hand line with 80-pound line on it, and a hook and a sinker. And Darren hooked this Spanish mackerel, and the skipper said, "Someone's going to hook a mackerel sometime today," and that reel just span up off the deck, and a line was ripping through, and we caught this fish, and the buzz on board was just. You're just amazing. We were already a fishing family, you know, grew up very blessed to have grown up on a farm down south in Whittlesea, fishing the freshwater, fishing Port Phillip Bay, but to go to the reef and catch those beautiful, colourful fish. But to me, it got even better when we went out to Green Island. You know, we did the glass bottom boat, we went to the observatory.
Yeah.
See that the colours of the reef, you know, kids are hard to impress, right? And at the Great Barrier Reef, is truly great, you know, and we were just, yeah, we're just so excited. We went for a swim and just the coral and the fish life and the tropical vibe. It just left such an impression on us. And I think that's why it's important for people, from around Australia and from around the world to visit, because it leaves this lasting impression and it helps us understand why it's such an important miracle of nature to protect. I mean, go on forever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
2,000 kilometers long, 1,500 species. you know, just a kaleidoscope of colors, and you know, if there's one place you must visit in the world, it's the reef. Simple as that.
That's right.
Nothing better, you know. So big impression right from the start, and I'm so glad that my mum and dad took us there. It changed our lives.
Yeah, right. And it seems to be a pretty similar theme with all our guests now. As you mentioned, the gear's changed a lot over the last 50 years, but and the reef has as well, but it still has that pull, particularly for fishermen like yourself. What makes it such a special place? You touched on it a little bit, but the variety of species and the natural environment is arguably unique anywhere in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, without question, that's just a big tick straight away, you know, the huge variety of fish that you can catch, but and the colours and the environment. But we never, you know, everywhere else we plan, we look carefully at tides and this and that and the other. And there's some great fishing around Australia, don't get me wrong. But as soon as we sort of start to look at the reef, myself, my crew who have worked with me for over 25 years now, and my guests, that we all like, okay, we're going to catch fish. We're going to catch good fish.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, there's that massive variety. I mean, there's probably like 30, just to start with, there's probably like 30 bucket list species. You know, if you start talking about Spanish mackerel, marlin, coral trout, red emperor, the list just goes on and on, you know, 20 species of trevally. So, yeah, as far as angling goes, it's just remarkable. And the Great Barrier Reef also extends up the creeks and rivers. Well, the marine park does at least anyway. And so it's not just the huge variety of fish and coral, but it's a huge variety of fishing scenarios that let you pretty much catch a fish no matter when you come up. We all want those beautiful glass off clear water days, and that allows you to go anywhere. But even when it's windy, you've got the trade winds blowing or different things happening, you're always going to have a good time on the reef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we often talk about that, you know, that the reef is so much more than the coral and the shelves, et cetera. There's, you know, seagrass meadows and there's estuaries and all that sort of thing. So it leads me on to my next question, and you sort of touched on it a little bit. How has wreck fishing changed, you know, over the last 20, 30 years in your experience as someone who's been there many, many times and fished, you know, arguably one end to the other?
Well, the boats have got, like, you know, if we think about that old wooden clunker that we went out on Cairns the very first time, we went half an hour out. We weren't even halfway to Green Island. And now you've got bigger, faster boats that can go further, quicker, in more comfort, more safety. Electronics that you can use to find the fish. You know, in recent years, you've gone to side scan and down scan where you can look at individual fish. And now you've even got live target or live type systems where you can watch fish swimming around live on the sounder. In between all that, so that's current day, in between all that, things come out like braid, which doesn't stretch much. So you can feel what's biting your line. You know, if it's a little tackle or something big by the feel of the bite. And you can turn fish away from the reef and get them away from the reef quicker so they don't snag you up. But also, amongst the technology advancements, I'm so excited about talking about the reef, has also become the way we use those to protect the reef, because in being able to go further with more comfort and being able to fish, you know, to be able to catch more fish in a shorter time, easier, and with more people visiting the reef, there had to be, and we're noticing it as well, there had to be an education and a community sort of spirit that comes along and says, well, we need to look after it even better now.
Yeah.
Even though in the 70s when we went, you know, to the Green Island tour, I remember that ethos of the guys talking about how special it is and how to look after it, not walk in the wrong places and not take shells. It's just become more important now, particularly for people who are using the reef, like recreational anglers and spearfishers and divers and charter operators. And I'm sure we're going to talk more about all that. But you know, we can actually use that technology to better look after the reef and manage it better as well. So that's something that's become very important.
Yeah, from our point of view, and we spoke a little bit about this when we last spoke, you know, zoning certainly helps with that sort of thing, where you can fish, where no-take areas are, and basically permissions on what you can do across the reef. Do you remember when those zoning permissions were sort of brought into effect around 2004? You know, there was probably a lot of conjecture around them, and people thought that they were brought in to stop you from fishing the reef, but given our push for sustainable fishing, it's sort of inherently the opposite, isn't it? It's basically putting those zones in place so you can catch a fish and you can catch the same fish tomorrow, if you like.
There's no questions that zones work, zoning works, but yes, you're 100% right. If I rewind, you know, at the time I was maybe 5 years into my media career and at the trench front of you know, recreational anglers going, are they going to lock us out of this area?
Yeah.
You know? And then the scientists saying, no, it's going to be good. And it seemed to be almost like a sort of, you know, a greenie movement versus, you know, the common everyday angler. But most of us anglers are conservation minded. In fact, when I started Fishing Australia, our ethos right from the start was to teach sustainable fishing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just, you know, that's what we use. We fish, we want there to be fish for tomorrow. We want fish to grow better and in the best way that they can. So I was at the front of that, and there was, you know, there was probably some political leverage that, you know, saying, oh, you know, we're going to get locked out of this, you know, and look, you know, where to put zones when they're close to communities is always going to be debated, because they have to be done in a way that lets, you know, that local community fish. Now that's up to the local communities to talk with the marine parks, because sometimes the zoning changes. You know, there's been marine parks happened down south that I was right in the thick of.
Yeah.
And what we found was that the marine parks, you know, at the start, you know, everyone was like, yeah, Rob, you come and help us, you know, and we're even protesting against it. And it came full circle, because we started to realize, like, hang on a minute, maybe these guys have got a point, you know,
yeah.
And maybe, you know, when we started to think about and not treat it as an emotional topic, treat it as a way that, hey, you know, everyone's trying to work together here. And we started to come to our senses, you know, and see that it's worked. And, you know, new marine parks will always have that, you know, people always, yeah, what's going on here? you know, because the scientists and everyone have done their work and worked out what to do. And it's the same with any rule change in fisheries. You know, people are like, what's going on here? But once they start to digest it and see where it's coming from, it's usually a good decision. In this case, 100% it's been a good decision.
Yeah. And you would see, I guess there's probably no better person to ask. I know from our point of view, we see, I guess, the research that shows the spillover effect, and there's more species of fish in no-take areas, et cetera, which helps areas where you can fish. Do you see that personally when you're out there fishing? Do you see that there's more or an abundance of coral trout, sweetlip, et cetera?
That was always a given for me. I thought that would be the case, but I'm glad there's been studies on it. And, you know, some of the studies are showing that there's 50% more coral trout, for example. For listeners out there, a coral trout's one of the prize reef fish. It's a beautiful looking fish, a spectacular table fish, and one of the jewels on the reef of many, but one of the top ones. You know, and I would argue that that was a given, and it's probably even more when you go swimming in an area that's a green zone. So that's, you know, the phrase a marine national park is often used, a green zone where you can't fish.
Yep.
You guys know that you swim there and you nearly always see fish. Of course, there's going to be times when there's a cold current or the fish are hiding or there's been a storm, but by and large, those zones have they have bigger fish, they have more variety. And again, I love that the scientists put so much effort into studying this, but it's a given that those generally the big fish are the breeders. They're the good genetics. They lead the pack. They've got big because they've got quality genetics. And so they breed and those eggs disperse and fill up the recreational fishing areas nearby.
Yeah.
And it's just like pollination, you know, it probably doesn't surprise a lot of people, but you know, back at the time, I understood that already, but back at the time, it was an emotional topic working out where to put these things, but it's worked. And in the case of the Great Barrier Reef having the biggest marine park in the world, it's also so important for, you know, if a certain reef has a cyclone or a coral bleaching event, a green zone nearby that survived will sort of disperse its larvae and fish and coral spawn to that reef and repopulate it. So
yep.
It's like having pockets of rainforest amongst the farm, you know, for people that don't understand the reef as well as we do. To answer your question, I'm so excited about it. But to answer your question, yes, absolutely, we notice great fishing when there's green zones. And the same goes for other zones that complement the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park. Like in Cairns, you have the tree inlet net free zone, you know, where it's not netted. And we've noticed, you know, within a couple of years that, you know, helped the fish to stock straight away. But the marine park, having been in place for 20 years now, and it can take a few years to see it work. It just doesn't fish grow slow. You don't just suddenly see big fish. But, you know, across that 20 years, I've definitely seen better fishing, you know, in areas that didn't fish as well. And we get that comment a lot from other people who live on the reef and fish it recreationally or charter boats and spearfishers and tourists as well. So there's no question it works, and I love that the community is getting more engaged with that because that's important as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the things that I've read that you've written a number of times in different places is the key to sustainable fishing, and it sounds like a no-brainer, is knowing what to take home and knowing what to put back. And you talk about fishing smarter and not harder. What are some of your tips or can you put that in context in terms of the Great Barrier Reef?
Yeah, I talk about fishing smarter, not harder, often in terms of like, you know, things like tide change is a great time to catch fish. Dawn and dusk are times when predators are active. But the reef's an easy place to catch fish. I think the most important thing for people visiting the reef is more about learning sustainable fishing techniques. Like, you know, you don't need to use a rig with two hooks on it. You know, people, new fishers in particular, and even some experienced ones, get excited about using two hooks, double the chances. But what it means is that, you know, that second hook could get hooked on the reef and snag that fish to the reef. It could, you know, you could get two good fish on and they break the line because they're pulling against each other. You only ever need one hook. And the most important hook to use on the reef is a circle hook. It's a Japanese invention that's turned in. It's designed to catch fish in the corner of the mouth. so that you can release them easy. You don't catch them deep in the throat as often. So fishing's not perfect. We're always going to lose an odd fish here or there, but the circle hook really increases your chances of releasing a fish healthy. And we'll talk some more about sustainable fishing in a minute, I'm sure. But, you know, fishing smarter on the reef means, you know, you're doing things like the spot lock electric motors now. We spoke about technology. That means you don't have to use an anchor anymore, and that damages the reef and also acts as a dinner bell to the sharks. We have something on the reef called depredation, where the sharks turn up to get an easy free feed. So the spot lock electric motor, all the outboards have it these days as well, some of the newer outboards. They basically sit you on the spot over the reef where you've sounded fish. You might have sounded a school of nanogai or red emperor or coral trout or a nice patch of reef. And it allows you to spot lock fish without having to struggle, pull the big anchor up or drag it across the reef. So, you know, we're fishing smarter, not harder. In some areas, it means you're actually trying really hard to catch a fish. But on the reef, fishing smarter, I think, is all about sustainability. You're blessed living on the reef, I can tell you that. I know.
Yeah, that's right.
But, fishing smarter is, I think first and foremost, if you can go to the reef, whether you're a tourist, new, or even experienced angler, really, really think about how you can do it sustainably, because you're going to go back to those spots. They're going to become your favorite spots. And
if
you look after them, they're going to look after you.
That's right. What about some common misconceptions? I guess a lot of people that go fishing on the reef or after a nice feed of red emperor or some other really tasty reef fish, but there's a smart way to do it, isn't there? I remember you saying once, the best freezer is below the surface, right? Rather than having a freezer full of fish at home.
Yeah. Well, always limit your catch rather than catch your limit. You know, I'm a big fan of, like, you know, you don't want to go filling your esky just so you can give it away to the neighbors, you know, or freeze it and go, oh, I've got to eat that quick. Just take what you need for your immediate needs. Because the best freezer is back down there. That's, and they're growing. They're not sitting in the freezer. And you know, if you fish, I know some of the prize fish are slow growing, but they're still relatively quick growing if they've got good feed around. You know, we've had some wet years and the land is certainly connected to the sea. And so, you know, you leave that fish alone, it might be 3, 6, 12 months till you come back, and that fish will be there for you, you know, especially your reef fish. But importantly, I want to encourage people to not just think about the prize species, the coral trout, the red emperor, and that, because there's pelagic species that move through the reef. Spanish mackerel, for example. You catch one decent Spanish mackerel, I like to have a floater out the back. So while I'm reef fishing, a floater is basically pilchard on a gang hook, and that's what catches Spanish mackerel. You get an average mackerel on the Great Barrier Reef, which, you know, the average bracket's probably between 5 and 15 kilos. You need a 10-kilo mackerel, a very high-yield fish. You're probably going to get, you know, 7, 8 kilos of pullets. That's a lot of fish. It's going to feed a lot of families for a lot of dinner. So think about switching the fish. Think about trevally as well, for example. You know, don't get caught up. Trevally, a very, very common, abundant schooling fish on the reef. You know, if you're not catching coral trout on a particular day and catch a couple of trevally, think about how you might use that in a different recipe. I come from a day when, showing my age now, when back down south, squid was only bait, right?
Yeah, right.
When it became calamari, it became popular. Kingfish, right? I remember catching yellowfin tuna and snapper, and kingfish weren't rated. Now they're right up the ladder.
Yeah.
So, you know, trevally and fish that might be generally considered a 6 or 7 out of 10, if you use them the right way in a casserole or a curry or smoked, they can start to become an 8, 9 out of 10 fish. And it takes the pressure off, if you're fishing your own little local spot, a lot of it takes the pressure off those other fish that might, you know, sort of live there for long parts of the year, you know, so they're like what we call loosely resident fish. Think about, think about those other fish as well. We all love our coral trout and those other red fish that we call them. On the reef, but think about other species as well. Long-tailed tuna are a classic example. Save the day many times for me. At the moment, there's long-tailed tuna from the tip of Cairns right down to Tathra in New South Wales, a very abundant fish, but they're all along the reef for a lot of the year. And so if you're traveling out and, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get to my favorite reef, it's chopping, it's starting to chop up a bit, but I can see a few tuna. You catch one long tail that's average 10 kilo, you know, there's countries in the world that would we'd pay thousands of dollars for that. We're blessed to have that that option, you know. And that attitude is changing, you know, between the Marine Parks Authority, fisheries and the communities. That is starting to come through with younger anglers, that they recognise that, you know, that it catch those faster growing pelagic fish. Let's take the pressure off the price fish a bit.
Yeah, so exactly.
We can all do our part, you know, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And you've almost answered my next question with a couple of those tips there. And it sounds like there might be a cookbook in the works with those recipes. Obviously, we have bag limits for a reason, and you touched on that sort of in depth then. And what would you say to someone who thinks their individual fishing practices, you know, the average punter that goes out in their tinny and catches a few fish, what would you say to them that think that their fishing habits don't really make a difference?
Absolutely, they make a difference on many levels, because if they don't care for that coral trout that was just a bit undersized and it doesn't live, then the next time they go out, it's right on them. But it's also on the next person that goes out. And that runs across all species. The other thing is that it's about who's watching you as well. You know, you've got younger generations looking at you. A lot of people, Aussies, can tread lightly, and you know, if you're doing the wrong thing, it sort of dominoes that way. You know what I mean? Like, people sort of like, oh, you know, I wish that person did do the right thing, or someone that doesn't know better might copy. If you do the right thing, okay, you're creating a snowballing effect. You know, the kids see you doing the right thing, and why it works for yourself, it works for the community, so it lifts people, rather than sort of, you know, makes them go, oh, you know. And, you know, a lot of Aussies are sort of very carefully spoken. They tread lightly. But, you know, you don't want someone thinking, oh, I wish that guy wasn't keeping undersized fish, or I wish he was doing that. And, you know, I think that, you know, that if you do the right thing, it definitely helps. It helps everybody, and it helps yourself.
That's right. Yeah. And there's certainly from our point of view, there's no better advocate for fishing the right zones than someone like yourself. And there are ways to make sure you're doing that right. There's really no excuse to be fishing, you know, green zones. We have things like the Eye on the Reef app to make sure you know where you are and you know what you can take.
Probably in having people think about sustainability when they go to the reef, that mindset's most important. But one of the most important tools they can have is the Eye on the Reef app, and it is a godsend. Whoever made it's done a great job. The Eye on the Reef app, if I can sum it up, is a free app that doesn't need mobile service, and it helps you understand the zoning and where you are. So there's multiple zones. There's zones you can't even travel through. There's zones you can travel through that you can't fish the green zones. There's general zones where you can fish. And there's a lot of rules. And we might think, oh, all these rules, but it means it's not a free-for-all. It actually helps us manage the reef in the way the sciences have planned it, and ways that we know are working. But the Eye on the Reef app, I mean, how about this? You're traveling out, and pre-planning is very important. You've got to think about where you're going. You're going out to a reef that you've checked, the weather's looking good, whatever. You've got your bait, you've prepared, you know where you're going. And you'll know before you even get there, because you can surf around on this app at home and go, I'm going to that reef. There's the green zone. There's the general zoo zones. There's the yellow zone. I'm going to fish here in these conditions. And you can put your cursor over that spot, hit the rules, and it'll tell you how many hooks you can use. Can you spearfish?
Yeah.
Can you troll? All the different things you can do. And then when you get there, even without mobile service, it shows where you are on the map. And I don't think there's any, I haven't seen many apps like it around the world. It is a really, really good app. So download. I actually encourage my friends and family to download, even if I'm the skipper, because they can see where we are on the map, and they can see where the green zones are and understand how big the reef is and how many wonderful different zones they are to help manage the reef. So the Eye on the Reef app is, it is the absolute godsend. It's something that you should download. And you download the fisheries rule app as well. because that shows you your size and bag limits. And again, those size and bag limits are put in place by fishery scientists who understand that fish, when they get to a certain size, breed. And sometimes there's a maximum limit because sometimes they don't breed until they get a maximum size. So those rules are in place to give the fish a chance to grow to a certain size quickly and give them a chance to breed. So between the Eye on the Reef app, the fisheries app, it's Queensland Fisheries app 2.0, and of course your weather apps, you know, these are the three things you want to be looking before you even set off to the reef. Now, if you go out with a charter boat operator, they'll know all that. And some of them are next level. Like a lot of the charter boat operators have become reef guys, or, you know, they're accredited with the Great Barrier Reef, where to a point where their love of the reef is so much that they're going to do extra things above what I've just mentioned to make sure you're looking after the reef. But for your general public, and if anyone planning to head up whatever time of year, whenever, the Eye on the Reef app, first couple.
Exactly. Now, we touched on it earlier. On the ideal day, the water's glass, the sun's shining, you head out to the drop-off. Can you give us some specifics from your years fishing the Great Barrier Reef? What's the biggest, best, fondest memory of some fish that you've caught out there?
Oh, there's so many. I think the earlier ones when we first fished the reef with my brothers would be up there. And between that and the greatest moment, which I'm about to say, there's been so many. There's been so many. It's a lifestyle. But to give an example of how great the Great Barrier Reef is, if you go for giant black marlin, and there's more giant marlin caught off Cairns every season than the realest of the world combined. So, and that's just one species. I guess I was sort of my mid-20s, roughly when Fishing Australia was sort of just starting to become a thing. My brothers and I went up and we entered in a tournament, and we hooked this marlin that was estimated to be over 1,200 pounds. We fought it for a while. The sharks ended up getting it, which was just starting, and that's a whole nother story. But, you know, to see a creature of that size, it's got an eye that big, you know, and to be part of a tagging program where you're catching these fish and tagging them for research purposes, well, it just blew me out the water. We ended up tagging a shark, which won us some money, but it wasn't never about the prize money. It was about being on the reef, living aboard a mothership on the outer reef, you know, outside the marlin competition fishing time. We're catching giant fish on the reef and on the drop-off that, you know, our bait's that big. You know, my bait can't even fit on this screen here, right? remarkable. That would be up there as far as fishing stories go. But I would say these days, taking people to the reef and introducing them to their first fish on the reef, when I have a celebrity guest that's never been, one of my kids or a niece or nephew or just someone that's never been to the reef, taking there and watching the delight in their eyes and seeing the experience how I first saw it, that's my true joy, and helping them understand why we've got to look after it, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, okay, it's good advice. What about some tips for people who are just starting out, those people that have never caught a fish on the reef? Is it a matter of doing your research, you know, finding what the fish are, baits, or just tailoring it to where you're going?
It's a huge question, and I normally, when people ask me, I sort of narrow it down to saying, okay, if you're going up there for the first time, it's great to jump on a charter boat. Because I'll take you to the good spots. You know, most people have only got a week up there or two. You know, and then we talk about budget, whether you're going to go on a boat with, you know, 20 other people, or if you can afford a bit more, maybe go on a boutique one, or an estuary trip, you know, where you get to experience the reef, do a bit of crabbing, you know, the inner reef. So think about what you want to get out of it. You know, have you got good sea legs? You know, we're still going in the open ocean.
Yeah.
So think about that side of things. So if you're visiting for a short amount of time and it's probably your dream trip, you know, save up and go out on a charter boat. It'll be an experience that you'll never forget. They'll put you on the spot and they'll help you with everything we've spoken about and then some. If you plan to fish yourself, if you're a good fisho and you're towing your boat up, again, Eye on the Reef app, first thing, fisheries, got to be done, and the weather, of course. And then think about species that you want to target. You know, so if you're staying at Cairns or your Poon or you're down at Bundaberg or wherever you are, think about the species you might want to target. Really good to call a local tackle shop and say, hey, I'm coming up. They're like me. They're not there to get rich. They're there to help people. They love fishing, right?
Yep.
So chat to your local tackle shop and they'll say, yeah, you're coming up in winter. There's some good mackerel about, you know, and you can sort of discuss a bit of a plan. And they genuinely like help you doing it. They know you're going to drop in the shop and they want to see you come back with a photo of a nice fish that you caught. If you're fishing on the bank and you're just starting out and, you know, again, tackle shop, talk to a tackle shop. Crockwise up north, of course. You know, you're suddenly entering that domain. So, yeah, talk to your local tackle shops and look up your Croc Smart stuff, because it's not that like down south where you can go for a swim easily or be near the water easily. In some places, you know, once you sort of get north of Bundaberg, you really got to think about that. So, yeah, local tackle shops, do research, because it all pays off. Look, the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park green zones sometimes extend right close to the shore. And again, just jump on the app and have a look. And so do the other zones. There's other zones where you can't fish or can't even be in. So really have a look at that app and go, right, I'm staying here. Can I get to this spot? So you can't just look at the land and go, hey, I'm going to fish there if it's a northerly wind. You have to look at the zoning as well. And that'll make sure you're doing it responsibly. Pick a target species off the bank, talk to your local tackle shop, get the app, get the fisheries app, get the Eye on the Reef app, get the fisheries app, and go have fun, because you're going to have fun no matter what happens.
You must have a lot of people come up and say g'day and offer their tips or opinions or ask for hotspots and all sorts of things after doing Fishing Australia for, what is it now, 27 years?
Yeah.
Can we just ask you this as we look to finish up? What gives you, and you've touched on it a little bit, what gives you hope for the future in terms of fishing on the reef, not only, I guess, on the Great Barrier Reef, but right around Australia?
Hope for the future is that the young generation coming through, and I think thanks to fishing presenters and influencers and people who've got their heart in the right place and read up and understand the best way, the best practices to be sustainable. It's rubbing off on those younger generation and to see them come through and to see them, you know, use the reef and all the waterways around Australia more responsibly, and to have them, some of them turn into fishery scientists, and to see the government recognize what a resource we have and support it. I think we're in good hands to see the Indigenous communities more involved. You know, we'll work with some amazing Indigenous communities. I mean, all this gives me goosebumps to think that, it's in good hands, you know, and it's a work in progress, but it's in good hands. And no, I was just reading the other day, they nearly mined and drilled for oil on the Great Barrier Reef. Thank goodness, you know, some of our generations before us put their hand, or ahead of us, I should say. So thankfully some of our older generation put their hand up and fought that, you know. But these are big milestones. But as a community, you know, the thousands of people that visit the reef, we can all play our part. I do see a change, a shift in attitude, and that combined with the science and the marine park and the zoning and everything else that's coming, all those other tools and government bodies that are working. You don't get into fisheries to become rich. You don't get into being a scientist to become rich. You do it because you love it. And if we respect and read into what everyone's saying, we grow too. You know, someone like me that's fished for the reef for 50-odd years, I'm still learning. So if we take that conservation learning, dynamic attitude towards things, which the younger generation are doing, I think we're in great hands.
Yeah, excellent advice, mate. Look, there's no better ambassador for sustainable fishing on the reef. We really appreciate your time, Rob. We look forward to seeing you on our screens later on this year with Fishing Australia, and hopefully next time we chat, we might be on a boat somewhere.
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure. Always looking forward to the next visit.
Good on you, mate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Reef in Focus podcast. If you'd like to hear more, please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform, leave us a rating or review, and visit our website, reefauthority.gov.au, for more Great Barrier Reef content.